Accession number 30411, Mr. Claude Stefan Jarrett, Reel 2. Now, from you were at the depot at Westwood Ho from roughly August through into September. Then September, where do you go? You go to join 165 Company. Do you know where you joined them?
We left, and I think we went to Cirencester first. I think Cirencester was first. You know that after all these years, my memory isn't that good anymore. We were somewhere where we worked with a New Zealand forestry company and on the Earl of Bathurst estates.
Yeah.
And we did work for the New Zealanders, who were the active woods people, and we helped them and we worked with them, etc. But we also had other responsibilities.
Now tell me about the forestry work first. And what exactly did you do in the forestry?
Slashing and stuff, lighting, burning waste fires, you know, the sort of thing that they do.
You weren't chopping down trees then?
No, they did that. The chopping down trees was mostly active by the New Zealand foresters. They had a sawmill. The boss of the sawmill was the major. The heads of the various sections were the non-commissioned officers, and then the actual workmen were the staff who cut the trees down.
Now, where were you billeted? I mean, you don't know where you were. Let's keep it vague. Cirencester or somewhere, anyway, in England, anyway. What sort of living accommodation were you in? Do you remember?
Yeah, we had, I think that was the place for Bingham Hall. That was a big development long before the war, and there were a rifle range and an auditorium, and I slept on the rifle range on the floor on a palliasse for some months. And we were there, I don't know, 6 months or something. And we also
anything happened while you were there, or was it just routine? The
routine.
Same? Now you said there was other duties. You had forestry, but then there was something else.
The agricultural. We had every day demands from local farmers for assistance, digging up potatoes, digging up carrots, etc., etc., and helping with that sort of activity. And that was left to volunteer. You could volunteer for the farmers. Most of the farmers entertained the troops with giving them a dinner or something like that, but it was a sort of unofficial situation. You just volunteered in the morning, and if you were called out to go to farmer A or B, then they would pick you up. They would send a vehicle to pick you up at the camp and bring you back in the evening, and you were gone all day. I never did on any of this because it didn't appeal to me very much, but that was what you did. And I spent some...
So you didn't do any agriculture? You just
no, agricultural didn't appeal to me. But the normal activities dealing with the woodsman was very nice and active, and you lit huge bonfires to burn the branches, you know, stuff like that. And you had to be very careful that they were extinguished at night, that there was nothing left burning when you left. And then we went on. Yeah. I don't remember. We went on to...
If you don't remember the place name, don't worry too much. What were you doing?
What I remember is that the unit moved to Devon, South Devon, and we went to a place called Bridestow, which was just outside of Okehampton.
Bridestow,
Bridestow, Bridestow, which is outside of Okehampton on the edge of Dartmoor. And we were there, and I very quickly was asked for. They came one day and said, as an architect, can you draw? And of course I could draw. And the colonel or the local commander of the Royal Engineers, who was active in a local hotel at Lidford. I don't know whether you know that area at all. Lidford, Lydford. It's a very famous place, Lidford Gorge. The gorge is there, and very well known as a resort place. And they had taken over the local hotel, the Commander Royal Engineers, and I worked for a major. His name was Abbott Young, A-B-B-O-T-T, Young, Abbott Young. And I drew plans for the ECAC defenses of Plymouth. That was my own job in the office there. And I was billeted locally with a small family there in the village, and I was given a bicycle, and I cycled from the place every day.
From Bridgestow to?
No, from Lidford.
From Lidford.
I was detached. I was on my own, and I was, the unit stayed in Bridgestow, and I was in Lidford. And every morning I got up, and the family fed me, and gave me breakfast, and then I set off to go to the office, which was a mile or mile and a half away, and I went to my place where I had to. Have you changed the
tape? No.
Where I had to spend all day working, drawing up things, and then the unit itself had to act as every day to pick up corpses in Plymouth after German air attacks. And that was the time when Plymouth was very strongly attacked by the Germans every night.
It sounds like 41. Now, did you have to assist with that, or were you
out? No, nothing.
I had
nothing to do with that. I never went to Plymouth. I had never been to Plymouth
you
once.
You just joined the plans. For the
I knew from my friends in the unit, I had to go once a week to collect pay and so on, you know, and report to the office in Bristol, but I stayed otherwise on my own, and I was left alone. And after about 6 or 8 months there, the colonel applied for me.
Yeah, that sounds a long time to be drawing architectural plans.
There was a lot of work to deal with these defenses of Plymouth. I also had to involve myself in not only in battery defenses along the coast, etc. I was involved in an awful lot of that. And
so coastal defenses as
coastal well. Defenses as well as ECAC defenses. And I spent months there with Abbott Young drawing up whatever they wanted drafted up, and it was my job. And then the colonel applied for me to be transferred to the Royal Engineers as a draftsman from the Pioneer Corps. And the result of that application was that I was sent to Edinburgh to the Service Corps and never saw the colonel again.
So were you transferred as a draftsman or not?
I wasn't a registered draftsman because I only did the job as a draftsman. I was remaining a member of the Pioneer Corps 165 Company, and so as 165 Company, I was transferred to the Royal Army Service Corps in Edinburgh, in Leith, in the docks, at Scottish Command Headquarters. And I spent 6 or 8 months. And
so had you actually transferred to the Royal Engineers or not?
No, nothing.
No, right.
This Army Service Corps was what they gave me as a job, and I was in charge of.
So you'd left the Pioneer Corps?
Left the Pioneer Corps completely.
So what were you now with? You were the Army Service Corps?
Army Service Corps, and not only that, but.
Do you know which part of the Army Service Corps?
The Scottish Command Headquarters in Leith, which is part of Edinburgh, L-E-I-T-H.
So. And what were you doing for them in Leith?
I was in charge of the tire store. And I had hundreds and hundreds of tires. And every day I got offers from people walking past to offer me hundreds of pounds for a couple of tires, and you can imagine they were worth their weight in gold, tires in 1941, 42, etc. And I spent some months there.
Now, did you have any other duties, or were you just
No, that was it. That was my job. And
where were you living?
In the docks. We had very old barracks there from the Victorian era, and they were certainly not the most modern place to live
in.
What
were they like?
Oh, ancient. Smelly. Smelly and ancient. And I had one other chap there. There were a couple of Italians in our unit, and there was one Japanese. He was half Japanese, half English, and had been the same enemy alien, quote-unquote, as we were, but on the other side. He'd come from Japan, had been in England in school, and studying, if I remember correctly as well, and he had, I can't remember his name even now, it's gone, but he was a very nice chap, spoke English like you and I do. He had a English father and Japanese mother, or the other way around. It was maybe an English mother and a Japanese father. I don't remember which way, but he was half English, half Japanese. But he spoke Japanese like a Japanese and spoke English like an Englishman. Very nice chap, and he was one of the odd ones in one's life who, because we were all enemy aliens, and that was it. So anyhow, there was an order one day that if anybody felt they would like to apply for a commission, they could do so. So one day a sergeant applied, a corporal applied, a lance corporal applied, and I applied as a private. And the other three all went up to the War Selection Board and all failed. I was the only one as a private who passed the exams from the War Officer Selection Board, and the next thing was that I was...
Do you remember much about the tests?
Yeah, I inquired each of the people who'd been what the test was like and what they did and how they did and so on, so I had a pretty good idea of what the tests were like.
So you'd done your homework?
I had done my homework very carefully. It was not easy, mind you, to do. For instance, as one example I remember very clearly, you had to climb up a rope quite high to the ceiling, transfer to another rope, and come down. That was one example that several of them couldn't do. They didn't know how to climb a rope, which is, if you don't know how to do it, you can't. You have to know how to climb a rope because it's got to go between your feet in a certain way, otherwise you can't get up there. So I knew how to do that, and I got up and moved across and came down. So that was one item. And another item was that at the end of the test, when you had finished the test and everything had been done, and for instance, they did a piece of paper like that. It had been folded like this, with ink or something in between. And they showed it to you and said, what does that remind you of, that ink spot?
It's a Rorschach test, doesn't it?
All kinds of tests. And you donned a pair of boxing gloves. And you boxed for 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes, I forget how long, with another man. And that was it. And what else was there? Anyway, to cut a long story short, at the end of it all, when the tests were all finished, you were told to go into an office where there was a major in uniform sitting there behind all kinds of documentation and things, and he talked to you and he had all your exam papers in front of him. And he chatted to you about the results of the exams and so on. And it was always, I was told, a good idea to ask him a question. So one of the things I had written is that if I work behind a desk, I like the desk to be neat and tidy, like this, not messed up like that. And he said to me, Mr. Jarrett, by the way, I have to tell you the name change. I didn't bring that up yet. I forgot. I'll do that in a minute. Mr. Jarrett, you wouldn't be very happy in my position here, would you? I said, quite frankly, sir, no, I wouldn't. He said, well, you're going to help me now clear up my desk. Thank you very much. And we spent the next half hour clearing up his desk. He told me exactly what to do and where and so on. And that was it. So at the end of it all, he thanked me very much. And that was it. And then they notified my commanding officer that I had passed.
And this would be what, 42 or 43?
That was, no. That was, just a moment. 42. That was fall of 42. And I...
So what happened now? Because that's just a test. You still have to go to training, I presume.
Oh, that comes much later. I then had a long interview lasting a couple of days at the War Office. They sent me to the War Office in London, and there was a whole series of senior officers who interviewed me, asked me all kinds of questions. I had said that I wanted to be transferred to the Royal Engineers for a commission. And why did I want the Royal Engineers, etc., etc.? And, of course, also what would happen if I was taken prisoner and, you know, all that sort of thing. And would I be prepared to be active behind the lines if I was dropped? You know, all the sort of activities that could be connected with my being a foreigner and being speaking two languages, etc. And I must tell you about the name change.
Now tell me about it, because you were Jaretsky,
yes.
J-A-R-E-T-Z-K-I,
yeah.
And you were Claude Stefan Jaretsky.
Yeah.
Now you changed your name. When did you do that?
I did that before, as soon as it became possible to register to be transferred to English units. Before I was transferred to the service corps in Devon. Now, I must say as an introduction that I had become very friendly with the town clerk or town solicitor, I should say, town solicitor of Okehampton. We had, as a company, put on a company show in Okehampton for the people of Okehampton, three performances, if I remember it correctly, and I didn't participate in that, but the preliminary activities with which I helped, I had met this Mr. Fullwood, F-U-L-L-W-O-D, Fullwood, and he was a solicitor and lawyer in Southampton, in Okehampton, and his other office was to be the town solicitor. And Mr. Fullwood, being a lawyer, I said to him, once it became possible to transfer into the active units, Mr. Fullwood, you know, if we transfer, there's a chance that anybody could be taken prisoner with the name of Jaretsky. They easily find out where I come from. So with German efficiency, this wouldn't do. Would you act to change my name? And he said, yes, I certainly will. That's quite a complicated business since you are, on the one hand, a foreigner and on the other hand, a soldier. So he said, I'll take care of that for you. Leave it all in my hands. And he started by writing to the War Office, and the War Office replied and said, the man is a foreigner, and as a foreigner, you got to apply to the Home Office. So a exchange started, which took months. The War Office said, it's the Home Office, and the Home Office said, it's the War Office. and he had a file an inch thick of correspondence between the two units fighting each other, the War Office saying it's the Home Office and the Home Office saying it's the War Office. Eventually, Mr. Fullwood succeeded in getting the two together, that they finally established a procedure that could actively allow people in the armed forces to change their name, and this then became a very generally accepted procedure through his activities. And he charged me some nominal, ridiculous sum, like £5 or something, for a file ye thick, and I thanked him and more or less kissed him for having taken it on and having succeeded. And that's after that is when I changed my name.
Now, so you'd been passed the War Office Selection Board.
Yeah.
And what happened after that? That's 1942. So.
42, and eventually.
Where were you trained?
They agreed that I could be commissioned, because it was up to the War Office to give authority and authorization for the training to commence. And since I wanted to be trained in the Royal Engineers, the training units were in, if I remember correctly, in Northampton. God knows how many years ago this is. And we spent months in the training units.
So this is a Royal Engineer OCTU.
OCTU. And I was.
Do you know which one it was?
No idea. Couldn't tell you.
Now, what do you remember about the training as a Royal Engineer officer?
The two things I remember particularly were that we had to go to North Wales for active training, and I remember standing guard in the middle of the night in front of the camp, and some lady coming out from across the road with a cup of hot tea. That is forever remembered by me, because it was such an amazing thing to me that somebody would take the trouble to make a hot tea at 2 o'clock in the morning for some stranger who was standing guard across the road. And
now,
then,
what about the rest of your training? I mean, what did they train you in? What were you in the engineering side?
The engineering side, they gave us active training. For instance, I hadn't officially driven. You had to be able to drive. So I learned on a motorbike, for instance, in a big field, as like this table, a green field, grassy, and they put, I don't know, 10, 20 motorbikes in there, and each person took turns to drive around and learn how to ride a motorbike in the field. Now, it took a quarter of an hour, and the field was a field of mud, as you can imagine, and we all fell off the motorbikes, and that was what they wanted to show us, how dangerous it is, how difficult, and so on and so forth. I also learned how to drive cars and trucks and night convoys, etc. And we learned bridging, bridge demolition.
What did you learn about bridging?
They used Bailey bridges. You know these units that come to put together, and how to do it and how quickly you can do it, and you have to unload the truck when it comes, and so on and so forth. And then,
what about demolition?
Demolition, we learned how to demolish bridges, how to demolish buildings, the explosives you need, how to calculate this, all this sort of business, all the destructive elements, and how to build and how to construct bridges, because constructing bridges was one of the main items, or to demolish them, as the case may be. And then, what else did we learn? Well, you learned how to fire guns and, you know, clean rifles and all the rest of it.
So you got weapons training as well?
Weapons training, and...
How far did they go with weapons? Because you hadn't had much before, had you?
I'm sorry, I can't tell you anymore. It's difficult to remember these things. I certainly exercise to fire revolvers, and we were given personal revolvers that you had to fire and learn how to clean and how to load and you know, all that, how to unload, and all the rest that came with it. But
about rifle and Bren,
yeah, all that sort of thing, and Bren gun and whatever else was available at the time. I can't remember, it's too long ago. My memory isn't that good.
Okay.
So all I can say is that...
So how long was this course go? It was 42 to when? 43? It's quite a long course, isn't it?
I don't think it was very long. I don't remember. Anyway, all I can tell you is that I was commissioned in June, I seem to think.
June 43 then?
June 43 I was commissioned. And I was sent to Sir Anthony Eden's constituency, which was in Leamington, or Leamington, whatever, however you pronounce it, just north of London. And I spent some months there building a...
Leamington Spa, we've worked out.
And
which unit were you with there at Leamington Spa?
Oh, I don't remember. Couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you at all. But what we did was to build ammunition depots. They had in the constituency an enormous area of ammunition depots for the defense of London, ECEC. And they used to bring in a railway company to lay tracks. And then we were coming in with the unit and the workmen to build the depot and put the roof on and make it waterproof. And by the time we put on the last roof thing, the trucks, the railway came in with the loads of ammunition to unload inside for storage.
Now that sounds a big project.
Oh, they were. They were very big projects. I remember the colonel's name, Colonel Emerson, who was in charge of building it all. And we had ladies driving these huge lorries, and they were not allowed to drive them on the grass. We took the lorries from when they drove off the road to unload all the huge roofing units, etc., and get the stuff off, and then we drove them back to the edge of the road, and the ladies took them off and took them back to the plant to reload. And that was from morning, early morning to late in the evening.
Did you stay there? Well, having built them, did you stay in them?
No.
No. So you were just building them?
We were building them. And
were you drawing up the plans?
No. And then, no, that had all been done.
So you were just actually building them with the company, and you don't remember the number?
No. I don't remember anything much about it.